Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade graphic novel hardcover collected edition sales through Diamond to retailers for October 2013. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
I'm doing all right. A little overwhelmed from the number crunching. This was another month where we got, on the comic side, the top 400. Actually, the top 399 comics.
Gosh, you're gypped.
I know. I felt so shortchanged. But it was interesting because last month we got the top 400 on the comics side, but because the variant or the 2D, 3D covers eating up an additional 52 slots over at DC that wouldn't normally have happened, we only got another 48 items down the list. So we're getting some more visibility these days. But that's the comics side. We're, of course, going to talk the trade side here. We'll probably dive a little into the comics and such. Let's talk the breakdown of how the top... trades and such went. DC had the lion's share. They had 30.16% of the total units sold for all top 300 trades. Marvel was nearly 10% behind, with just a hair under 21%, with 20.98% of the total units sold. Now, if we look at the actual number of units, because percentage is good in terms of relative strengths, but it was 120,690 units for DC, or thereabouts, 83,943 units for Marvel. So pretty significant difference there. Image doing a fairly strong third place with 14.32% of the total units sold for the top 300 trades. That equates to, 57,306 units. And then Dark Horse not all that far behind with 241 units, which accounts for about 10.32% of the total units sold for the top 300. So, not too bad. IDW, 6.67% of the total units sold. It's about 26,678 units. Between those premier publishers, that's, 329,908 units, versus everybody else who sold 70,201 units out of that top 300. So, obviously, a lot of publishers on the list, but still, you know, the premier publishers are the big dogs in this industry. But it's a much more even playing field here on the trade side than it usually is over on the comic side.
Yeah, speaking of even, it's rare that Marvel has an even number of new items and reorder items here. 34 new items and 34 reorder compared to DC's 28 new items and 42 reorder items.
Well, and that's the other thing you'll notice if you look further down on that list is the number of reorder items for all the other publishers drops off pretty substantially after Image.
Right.
Of course, Image, just with Walking Dead alone, accounts for a lot of their reorder activity. But on the new comic side, new material is really what matters. On the trade side,
right,
new material is what's going to get you at the top of the list, but recurring sales on existing material is what's going to keep you kind of in the game on this side of the market.
Which, exactly. That's what we look for every month anyway, right?
Exactly.
It's fun to see the new stuff come out, like a new premiere hardcover or something like that, or new stuff that's old from the 1960s or 70s or 80s. But, you know, really what you're looking for is that what we call that evergreen title that comes out.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting this time around, if we look at what the top, the top seven items, all of them are above 7,000 units by a wide margin. And we have months where few things seem to creep above the 5,000 mark, if that. So really good set of releases this time around. You know, topping the list was the third volume of the Batman hardcovers with the Death of the Family stuff, 12,375 estimated units. Again, sales like that on the trade side, you know, don't happen that often. I mean, that's around what I'm thinking we would get for like a new Walking Dead or something.
Right.
Next up is the Avengers Endless Wartime original graphic novel hardcover, 9,024 units. Now, this is interesting because it's one of the few original graphic novels. Most of the stuff we see on the list, of course, is collected editions and reprints. Have you read this?
I did read it. I read it digitally, actually. I bought it off Comixology. And although, I mean, it was an interesting story, and it was great that it felt like your six-issue series or something like that, and you had it in one shot. And here, you know, for the hardcover, it's $24.99, and, you know, it was worth the amount I paid. You know, I'm happy I read it, too, because I thought it was a decent story, but not the greatest Avengers story, especially with it was competing almost with Infinity going out at the same time, and I'm loving Infinity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if it came out, you know, in between Avengers events, I thought that may have been better. But, you know, you kind of see that it takes place right before Infinity. At least that's what I gathered. And it was a good story. I mean, every character had their share of pages. I wish, you know, and as I was reading it, I don't know if you thought about this, but I thought about what DC was doing in the Earth 1 or the Earth 2, or was it Earth 1 universe?
It's Earth the Earth 1 stuff. Yeah.
Earth 1 stuff. You know, you have that original graphic novel, which I would like to see these companies do more of, not just Marvel with Avengers, but and not just DC with Batman and Superman. But I like these, you know, longer form reads, you know, that, you know, we had back in the 90s. You know, we just don't have them that much anymore, which is too bad. But I hope to see another Avengers one. I hope to see an X-Men one. I think that'd be really nice to see.
Now, do you think they should do these with high-profile properties? Or do you think this might be useful, kind of like how they did in the 80s and such, where they used the Marvel graphic novel series to launch things like the New Mutants and similar, you know, other launchpad-type properties?
Right. Well, I was thinking, yeah, when you mentioned that, I was thinking of all my Punisher hardcovers that I have, you know, like Return to Big Nothing and one of those types of books that I really, really enjoyed back in the day. But yeah, you're absolutely right. They should experiment with these different properties. And with that, it just kind of dawned on me, you know, they're experimenting, or they will be experimenting on Netflix with their properties like Daredevil and Luke Cage. Why not experiment in the same way on the print side of things with those characters too?
Make for great companion pieces. Totally.
Mm-hmm. It would.
And giving somebody a full story, beginning, middle, and end in a single installment, there's a lot to be said for that.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when those things, after the Netflix stuff, I mean, I've got to assume at some point they'll hit DVD.
Right.
And then it'll be in the bookstores, and you just put the hardcovers or trades or whatever of original content next to it. That could be a big success.
Did you like the book? Did you read it?
I liked it. I thought it was good. It didn't like totally blow me away or anything right. like that, but it was entertaining and it made sense.
There was a lot of verbiage, you know, but Warren Ellis did this, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, so I was going to say, yeah, Warren, I'm just slipping my mind, but yeah, so that's kind of to be expected that you're going to get a lot of script with a Warren Ellis book. But it was good. The character interaction was good, and like I said, everybody kind of got their FaceTime. Including Thor. You know, I really saw this as like a, you know, Captain America on one side and Thor on the other side and everybody else kind of in between in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it was a fun read. And again, I like that they're doing original material to trade, mm-hmm. or in this case, hardcover and such, but, you know, original graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
I think it gives them a story freedom and flexibility that you really just don't get when you serialize stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see how this does in trade format, you know, whenever that comes out.
Yeah, you know, if we were to go on a recommendation here, which we really don't do all that often, but I would almost like, you know, save your money for the $24.99 unless you're a diehard Avengers fan and wait for the soft cover or even buy it digitally.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Now, what's interesting, excluding the digital aspect of it, looking at just the print side of this, because it's an original graphic novel straight to hardcover, they haven't double dipped on the print side. In other words, they didn't have a couple of monthly issues. Now, I mention mm-hmm. that because, again, the 9,000 units is strong trade sales.
Absolutely.
but on par with stuff we would see it, that has already been seen in print and just collected. Again, right above this is that Batman Death of the Family hardcover. Right below it is the Joker Death of the Family hardcover. So that's material that had already seen print in the monthly issue format, got collected, and is both above and below where this Avengers Endless Wartime is. So you could argue whether it would have really broken up nicely and fit well into a miniseries, they missed an opportunity to double dip on that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think they made the right choice on this. Speaking again of that Joker Death of the Family one, that did 8,611 estimated units, which is well below where that Batman one did. And I always find it interesting when, you know, you've got two hardcovers that come out a week apart, and there's, you know, nearly a 4,000 unit difference in sales there. You know, clearly some chapters were more interesting to people than others, I guess.
Right.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, maybe the price difference did. It's $5 more for the Joker one.
True, true. But I'm assuming it kind of finishes off the storyline. I'm not sure which is in, which issues are in which.
I can look that up.
Collection,
quick.
Yeah.
Do we have that? No, you didn't.
Now, for some reason, I don't have much of the solicitations on the trade side this time around. I'm just noticing that.
I'm
not sure what's up with that. I've got them on the comic side.
I'll look it up. We'll come back to it real quick.
All right.
Should have that out.
Right below that was the Batman Court of Owls book and mask set. That did 7,740 units. So we're noticing very heavy Batman presence here on the list. And then next below that, at a $10.99 cover price, is the Avatar The Last Airbender Volume 6, which is the Search Part 3 trade paperback. 7,550 units. So Dark Horse is continuing to have quite a bit of success with the Avatar The Last Airbender property. I tend to wait for these in the library edition just because I could. Had I that decision to do over again, I probably should have gone with the trades, I think. That would have spread the cost out a little bit better, although the library edition looks nice on my my bookshelf. But then we've also got the Hellboy Midnight Circus hardcover. 7,542 units, and then another Batman property. This time it's Batman Volume 2 City of Owls trade paperback, 7,320 units. So seven items well above 7,000 units makes for just a strong month on the trade side. Very impressive. And then next, right after that, we got a couple items from Image. Two Volume 1s. First, the Lazarus Volume 1. Trade paperback with 5,484 units, and then reorder activity for the Saga Volume 1 trade paperback, another 5,316 estimated units there, putting that first volume of Saga trade paperback at around 76,266 units. So the Saga stuff is just doing gangbusters for Image. And really, that's showing that, in addition to Walking Dead, they've got the ability to get other creators there and have just a great deal of success. And, of course, right below that's Volume 2 of Saga. So, I mean, go figure.
Yeah, Image can do no wrong, it seems, these days.
Well, I mean, the structure of the company gives them an inherent diversity of material that's hard for any other publisher to match. They do a smart move by putting the first volume of the trades out at an under $10 price point, making it easy for somebody to get on board. Where I think Image's weakness is on follow-through. There are a lot of things that I would enjoy reading more of, but there is no more to read.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get a lot of things happen. I don't blame the creators or anything like that, but as a reader, I find it frustrating to be trying to follow, you know, where is Jake Ellis? And wondering, well, where is Jake Ellis? The thing hasn't seen print for quite some time. You know? Not to mention things like War Heroes and a few others that got halfway out, or Image United.
Right.
It goes halfway out and then just kind of fizzles. You know, so I respect creative teams like, you know, the one on Saga and such, and Lazarus. They're getting stuff out on a regular basis. When Saga takes breaks, they're planned breaks and convenient places in the story to do it. That's fine. Set my expectations and meet them. That's all I ask.
Mm-hmm. All right, you want the breakdown of Death and the Family? All right, Batman Volume 3. There is some crossover in these two books, too. Batman Volume 3, Death of the Family, collected Batman 13 through 17. And then, you know, and some extra stuff, too, you know, ancillary material. Like, you know, it says the hardcover features a dust jacket of the face of the Joker that appeared in die-cut covers. And that sort of thing. But as far as the contents, it's 13 through 17. Now, in the Joker Death of the Family proper, it collects that Batman number 17, Catwoman 13 and 14, Batgirl 14 through 16, Batman and Robin 15 through 17, Nightwing 15 and 16, Detective 16 and 17, Red Hood 15 and 16, Teen Titans 15, plus pages from Batman 13, Batgirl 13, Nightwing 14, Red Hood 13 and 14, Suicide Squad 14 and 15, and Teen Titans 14 and 16. So,
what's boy, the page count on material. Those two?
456 pages for $29.99.
Wow, that's got to be a pretty thick book.
You know, for $30, that's not bad.
That's a hell of a deal, actually.
That's a really good deal for a hardcover. That is a really good deal.
Now, what's the trade dress look on that compared to that Batman one? Does it look like it's sitting next to it on the shelf very nicely?
Yeah, I don't own it, actually. I don't know.
I wasn't sure if you had a picture of the thing in front of you.
No, you know what? I'm on the DC website. And it just has, it's got, you know, Joker in his suit with the Robin vest on, looking straight at the camera. So
that's one where if I were them, I would have tried to have the spine of that Joker Death of the Family look as if it would be a natural fit for like a Batman Volume 3.5 kind of a deal. Mm-hmm. And just fit right there on the shelf next to those nicely. Mm-hmm. You know, at least the same size and format and such. Obviously a bit thicker because that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that makes sense. So anyone who's just following Batman itself would have picked up the Batman one. But really, unless you're into the bigger picture of the whole Batman family, I can see a lot of people skipping that.
Mm-hmm. Now, along with that, you know, how I mentioned that it kind of crosses over into the Batman book, Catwoman Volume 3, which is a Death of the Family trade paperback, that collected Catwoman 0 and 13 through 18. And like I said, the Joker book collects that Catwoman 13 through 14. So it does kind of cross over, you know, so... You know, if you really want the Batman book tie-in, you get the Batman one. But definitely, if you're interested, pick up the Joker book, which is, you know, isn't that kind of odd that the Batman book outsold the Joker Death of the Family book by, you know, close to 3,000 copies there. So
well, I think a lot of people don't really care about the bigger picture of the whole thing. They're Batman fans, right. Robin, Batgirl, etc. Now, what's interesting is...
But you and I, you know, you want the whole story. I mean, that's where our bias is coming from, right?
So. Totally. I mean, I bought all these things. You know that.
Yeah, of course you did.
Now, if you look at ranks 19 and 26, we've got Batgirl Volume 3 Death of the Family hardcover, 3,346 units, and Catwoman Volume 3 Death of the Family trade paperback this time, 2,763 units. So those fell far, far below where that even that Joker one did, which is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if people really felt the need to read that Batgirl one if the main part they were interested was the death of the family, which is in the Joker issue, or trade hardcover.
Right. Same with Catwoman, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I could see where the packaging of that Joker one really undercut the sales of the other two.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's the challenge they get when figuring out how to collect these things. I don't know that there is any perfect answer or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense to do the Batgirl and Catwoman volumes the way they did so the people just following those titles could just follow those titles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that makes perfect sense.
That's a problem for the editors. You know, if they want to do these massive crossovers and... put them out in trade paperback or hardcover. That's what they've got to figure out in their planning room.
Yeah. What's interesting though is it doesn't take us too long before not only are we below that 3,000 mark, but 2,000 as well. Because by the time we drop at Actually, I guess it's rank 44 with the JLA Earth 2 Deluxe Edition hardcover. We're at 2,001 units. So anything below that is, or even potentially this one, because these are estimates, they could be off by a couple of points. You know, we're below 2,000 units. So while we had a strong top of the list, again, the top seven above the 7,000 units, we only had two additional items above 5,000, only another, what, five items above 4,000, and then we quickly fall off from there. So what that tells me is, you know, as has been the case for a long time, you've got a few things when they first come out make a big splash. A lot of other things are moving, but not massive amounts. You know, some turnover at the stores, they need to restock or whatever. Or this isn't even reorder activity, actually, for a lot of this. It's just that's as much as they think they need. You get the mid-list titles, and I mean, I don't know that we'll ever see that Batgirl and Catwoman again on the list. Nor do I think...
I doubt it.
Think we'd ever need to. But it comes down to how many stores are there, what's the average order, you know, at a store. And really, that's an invalid question in many respects. I mean, I ask it all the time and stuff, just hypothetically. But, you know, there is no truly average store. Anyone who thinks there is, I mean, come on, let's get real. There's too big of a diversity of people, locations, interests, etc. for such a thing to exist. You're going to have some stores, you know, Jim Hanley's Universe, you know, other things like that, that are big chains or whatever, that, you know, they get a lot of these trades and stuff. Some that are more trade stores than comic stores, some that are more comic stores than trade stores. There are going to be some stores that didn't order any of some of these things. Obviously, not so much for the Batman one at the top of the list, but you know what I mean.
Right. No, I know exactly what you mean. And it's, you know, it's funny because that Earth 2 book, you and I know, that's not new. You know,
no.
That's 15 years old.
Yeah.
You know, that came out when Morrison was on JLA, and I think that crossed over, or it was not crossover, but it took place like near issue 10 of that run. That was a really early original graphic novel when in Morrison's run there.
But great timing for people to be reading it, going, what's going on with Forever Evil?
Oh, it's fantastic. That's a great story. Yeah.
Because this was when this Earth 2 was essentially the home of the crime syndicate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which previously had been pre-crisis on Earth 3 and such, but, you know, they needed to relocate it, I guess. I don't know.
No, and they've got, you know, they've got those great Justice League of America Crisis on Infinite Earths trade paperbacks where they cross over into Earth 2 and Earth, you know, 3 and the Fawcett universe and everything like that. And those are a lot of fun, too. And the Crime Syndicate has shown up in those books.
My favorite one of those, and I'm sure I've mentioned this before, no doubt will again, was when the Justice League, the Justice Society, and the All-Star Squadron all crossed over between issues of JLA and All-Star Squadron to fight the Crime Syndicate. George Perez art on some of those issues, certainly
nice.
In the covers. It was beautiful stuff, a lot of fun, and it crossed, you know, multiple not only Earths, but time frames.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff. And I think that was in one of the most recent ones, like volume 6 of the JLA JSA crossovers.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, you're probably right. That was maybe been the last one, right?
They've got almost enough to do another one after that. I just haven't seen any solicitations for it, which sucks because I'd buy it.
Yeah, I'd buy it too. I love all those ones.
So
yeah, Crisis on Multiple Earths. Here we go. It came out in June. Crisis on Multiple Earths, volume 6. Collected Justice League 195 through 197, 207 through 209, and All-Star Squadron 14 and 15. That was the one.
That's the one exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still waiting for us to get a JLA-JSA kind of a crossover in the new 52. I think we're still a year or so from it being warranted.
Yeah.
I think they need to build up the Earth 2 stuff a little bit more before they do that.
Yep.
But
might be next year, you know. So have they figured out, is the Crime Syndicate on what Earth are they from? Have we figured that out?
We were told they were on Earth 3.
3, okay.
That was just blurted out during, I guess, Trinity War or whatever.
Okay.
Which, again, is back to kind of where they originated.
Right.
At one point, it was kind of Earth 2, and it was also kind of the antimatter universe as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that was when DC was trying not to have a multiverse. I think was just a fool's errand. But
good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, but
just I think that DC is just they're accepting it. You're like, you know, we have multiple Earths and we're just gonna use it. So, and they should use it. They're using it to their advantage.
The problem
just was, don't go too crazy with it, you know, where they have to blow it up. So.
Exactly. The problem was they got rid of it because they thought it was confusing, and in the process, they made things confusing.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And if the goal is to simplify, then do that. Make mm-hmm. it simpler. But they didn't have a great game plan going in, and I'm not sure anyone could have.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you've got a couple of titles being published set on Earth 2 and you decide there no longer is an Earth 2, that's a pretty major status quo change for those titles. And pretty much what spelled the end for All-Star Squadron, Infinity Inc., I think, went quite a... I'm not sure how much longer it went after that. I think quite a bit, though, a couple of years. Mm-hmm. It's pretty impressive. So
what else? We're doing the more top 10?
We've gone through actually most of, I think all of the top 10. We talked about Lazarus and the two sagas, so that rounds that out. And then just below the top 10, we got My Little Pony Volume 1, Magic Begins, trade paperback. 4,501 units. Again, IDW's doing a good business with that. Smart move putting that at a $7.99 price point, making that easy for people to justify the cost on. What's interesting is the My Little Pony Tales Volume 1 down at rank 18 had a $19.99 cover price, which is quite a bit more expensive than the $7.99, and it sold 3,644 units. What else do we got down here that looks interesting? We've got a couple of Green Lanterns, the Fables Encyclopedia, Earth 2, a couple of volumes of Earth 2, let's see, a trade.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, I'll bring that up. It's funny you mentioned it because I just saw that the Earth 2, coming in at rank 25, the new trade paper, no, the volume 1 trade paperback, 2,992 units, and then just below that, at rank 29, the hardcover of the Tower of Fate, the volume 2, 2,592. So, selling well in the trade side, John, I think, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
There is an audience for that.
Well, I mean, that trade is $14.99 versus the hardcover of $24.99. I got to think a lot of people who are waiting for the trade are doing it, one, so they get a complete story, and I totally understand that. That makes a lot of sense to me. But also, it tends to be just a more affordable price point. If you're waiting a little bit for the collected edition, why not wait for the cheaper format?
Why not? Right.
That seems to have the added benefit of if it really sucks, you'll know about that before you make that purchase decision.
And you know what else? And we've talked about this before, but you know, you've got the main universe of DC, and then you've got Earth 2, and then in between that, you've got Power Girl and Huntress, which I think is a really fun story. And the dynamic between those two characters and how they, you know, they've been in the DC universe proper, Earth 1 or whatever you want to call it, for a long time now. So they don't have that fish out of water feel anymore. But, you know, they still are referencing Earth 2 now and then. And I think that might be the catalyst when they cross over. I think that they will be a catalyst for sure. There's no doubt about it.
I think that's starting to come up in the World's Finest stuff because one of the solicits mentions those two are going to tell Superman and Batman where they're from and who they are.
Okay.
And that prompts, I believe, a crossover between World's Finest and I think Batman Superman is the other title.
Oh, that'll be good. Yeah.
And it goes for at least two issues of both.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to that. It should be a lot of fun. It's World's Finest is one of my favorite titles over there.
It is, yeah.
So they're doing good stuff. Now, in time for the Thor movie, down at rank 35, we've got Thor Season 1 premiere hardcover, 2,217 units. That seems a little low, given, you know, the movie coming out and all that stuff. That also seems kind of in line with how the Season 1 titles tended to be doing. Do you know if they're going to keep going with that line, or how's that seem to be panning out for them in terms of future plans?
I don't know. And it occurred to me, you know, did they ever? I don't think they ever did a Wolverine season one, did they?
I believe they did.
They did an X-Men season one, didn't they?
My eyesight's not quite that good. I've got my whole stuff over there. Yes, they did do a Wolverine.
They did. Okay.
Yeah. Fortunately, I alphabetized them. I can guess what's between Thor and X-Men. Get some binoculars over here. That's the bookcases on the far side of the room.
Yeah, I mean, I've only read a handful of these. I haven't read the Thor one yet, but I seem to like them. I think they're okay for what they are.
I've been enjoying them. I thought they've done a good job. What I've noticed on some of the more recent ones, and I think Thor was one of these, the earlier ones reserved the last, 20 pages or something to reprint a current book to kind of springboard you into.
They did that in the Fantastic Four one, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't think they did that with Thor. Maybe it's one of the others I'm thinking of, though.
Okay.
It's been a while since I read that, because that came out at the beginning of October. And here we are in the middle of November as we record this, and I read a lot of books. My memory for something, 6 weeks ago, I've read maybe 200-300 books since then, comics at least, So, but I'm liking what they're doing there. They're keeping it accessible, good entry ramp. I'm just wondering how many more of these are they going to do? Are they going to do a season 1. Whatever, or one volume 2, or a season 2, or what are they going to do?
Mm-hmm.
For that matter, I'd like to know if they're going to expand the Earth 1 stuff over at DC beyond just what we've seen with Superman and Batman.
Well, they keep on teasing us with a Wonder Woman, but it never happens, so.
Wonder Woman, and I thought they mentioned a Batgirl one at one point.
Oh, really? Oh, that would be kind of cool.
I could be wrong on that. But yeah, they've teased that a lot. They just haven't delivered on that.
Right.
Let's see, what else do we have in here that looks interesting?
Well, I'll mention something.
Sure.
Down at rank 156, we have the brand new EC Archives Tales from the Crypt, this time coming from Dark Horse. And I have that in front of me right now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, for anybody that follows my podcast, knows that the whole EC Archives thing has been quite an interesting attempt in trying to reprint all the EC line. This goes back to when I met you, John, back at Comic-Con in 2006.
Wow, that was a few years ago, yeah.
When Gemstone announced that at that con, and of course they got 12 of them out, and then GC Press took over for 3 of them, and now we have Dark Horse taking over. And they are committed to doing one every quarter, and they only have about 30 to go, so we'll see next couple years if they can get the whole series out.
I would imagine they will, because I wouldn't think Mike Richardson would take on something like that without the intent to follow through.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I just talked to the guys at Dark Horse today in an email, because I had a question from one of my listeners saying, are they going to go back and reprint the Gemstone and GC Press archives with this new look? And there is a definite new look to it. And I will do that in a video podcast coming up. I'll probably get that out before Christmas and compare them, because there are noticeable differences in the trade dress, both on the cover and inside the contents of the book. But they intend to go back and reprint everything as it should look with Dark Horse. So you'll get one nice uniform thing, which kind of sucks for guys like me that have all the EC archives already through Gemstone and GC Press. But I'm not going to go double dip, and I'm not that crazy where I have to go do that. But I do know that the Gemstone stuff, one guy wrote me and said Tales from the Crypt number 1 is going for $400 on eBay.
Wow.
So maybe I will sell them and go back and get the resolicit through my DCBS discount at half off. Sell it for $400 and go rebuy it at $25, right?
Well, that so might.
I may have to do. I just have to wait about 10 years.
You just sell the one that may justify the whole rebuying the whole rest series of them. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Well, I was gonna say. If Dark Horse was thinking about it, maybe they could also sell, when they do those reprints of the other ones with the new trade dress, just book jackets for the existing ones you've got.
Wouldn't that be great? Yeah.
That would be thoughtful of them.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciated how when they did the switch over with the Spirit Archives, they managed to keep the trade dress pretty much the same between Dark Horse and DC.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice transition there.
Yeah, and you'll see when I do my video. I mean, because when the GC Press books came out last year, or almost a year and a half ago now, I did a video comparison between the GC Press and the Gemstone, and it was very, very similar. There are only minor differences. But now that Dark Horse has taken over, there are noticeable differences.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, look forward to that when I get that out. So, yeah. So maybe they will just do a new dust jacket. That'd be fine with me.
The question I've got for you, just as a real quick thing, if it's a bigger topic than that, maybe we'll do it as a roundtable discussion or something. Do you think trade dress really matters or not?
I think to some people they do. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's that completist in everybody. I mean, I have all my omnibuses lined up right in front of me, my Marvel omnibuses, mm-hmm. and some of them have the, you know, most of them say Marvel Omnibus written across, and the other ones have Marvel with the red lettering with the white background.
Right, right.
So, I mean, and then I look at my my Devil Dinosaur, and that's too thin of a book, so the Marvel Omnibus is written vertically. And then also, if you look at the new Masterworks, they've got the new spine on them as well, and it looks pretty out of place. But, you know, it is what it is. I like the uniformity. But I can see how some people could care less, as long as they have the contents in the inside.
No, I agree. For some people, it doesn't matter at all. But the uniformity and stuff, you know, I'm looking over at my bookcase and the various Chronicle books, Green Lantern, Flash, Batman and such, have a uniformity to the trade dress, different colors to denote the different series, that if I were to line all those up, would look nice.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I've got everything kind of across publishers, you know, alphabetical in my section of kind of to read or whatever, and it just looks like a jumbled mess.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that I think there's a lot to be said for trade dress, just from an aesthetic point of view, in addition to a functional point of view. I don't know, that's something that just, you know, I notice when I go to bookstores and I look at the manga section and whatnot. I recently picked up a couple of more books on the Super Sentai shows, and those were now being collected with DVDs, which kind of annoyed me, but they stayed a similar trade dress on the spines to how it had been before, but it made a couple of minor tweaks, such to where it's now all a white spine with the different lettering and so forth in the right places, and it looks surprisingly a lot more uniform, even though it's really the big difference, the color of the spine.
Yeah.
Before, it was just different colors for every season and whatnot, and it looks a little more random and haphazard versus, boom, now it's suddenly very standardized. That's something that, you're right, some people aren't going to notice at all, aren't going to care about at all, but I think makes at least a subliminal difference if somebody is going down the shelves and the racks and stuff at comic stores, at bookstores, at their own house. Mm-hmm. And I think it does matter to some degree. I think it could be an effective sales tool that isn't being leveraged. You add to that the different sizes and shapes of hardcovers and trades and whatnot. And I think the publishers are at times inadvertently shooting themselves in the foot.
Mm-hmm. No, I'll give it to Dark Horse. My Gemstone Tales from the Crypt, Volume 3, and then the Volume 4 from Dark Horse. And looking at the spine as they line up, it's a little different, but it's more uniform than I thought it would be.
Cool.
You know, the inside is where the real changes are, with, you know, different fonts for the foreword and that kind of thing, but that's being stickler. But, you know, that's why I'm going to do the show. Cause, I had a lot of great comments when I did the first one. So this will be fun to compare all three at once instead of just the two. So,
yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't expect uniformity of the font for the forward and stuff like that, to me.
No, but you'd be surprised, because when GC Press did it, that was very uniform. And then I crack open my Dark Horse one, and it's noticeably different.
You know, it's funny.
So they went from something completely different here.
On the one hand, I say I wouldn't really expect that. On the other hand, were I to publish, I would have somebody who's better at artistic design than I set up, here's the template we're using, and then it gets used.
Mm-hmm.
And it's consistent by default.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I mean, it's a simpler way to go do things. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, some things are the same. Some things are different. So we'll see. What else would you want to look at? Anything else left?
Let's see. Down at 196, we've got another hardcover that's original content. That's Molly Danger Volume 1. A friend of the show, Jamal Igle, big fan of his. It did 712 units. This was also, I believe, part of a Kickstarter thing, so no doubt it sold fairly well through there just to get it made. Hopefully this will go to a trade, get some additional readership and stuff like that. Again, big fan of his. Want to see him be successful. And I think, you know, for a Kickstarter-type campaign and whatnot, and for a brand-new property from Active Images, which is not, you know, exactly a big-name publisher or whatever, I mean, that's not bad numbers, actually. You know, were I to...
That's very good, yeah.
Yeah, were I to see a new collection, say, of a Marvel or DC title in this area, I'd say, hey, wait a sec. But, you know, that's not the case here. What else do we have? Let's jump down towards the bottom of the list this time, see if we've got anything. Marvel Masterwork, Doctor Strange, down at 298, 510 units. That's reorder activity, though, so that's not too bad. What do we got that's not reorder activity?
The Exo Man of War from Valiant.
$40 hardcover, man, that's
it's double-sized. It's got 15 issues in it. Or 1 through 14, and I think maybe an extra issue. But yeah, that's 537 units. That's not a whole lot.
I got to think that price tag contributed to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would think twice about something at that cost. And I like the Valiant stuff, and I think they're doing a good job with it. But
well, can I ask you, can I switch over to the comics and we want to talk about Valiant
sure.
real quick?
Yeah,
we can do that. Because I pulled them up just for fun because my friend Chris Campbell is going to be doing a new Valiant podcast, John.
Oh, cool.
And so I was going to take some of our numbers and loan them out to John or to Chris because they're going to have me on to do talking about trade. So this would be okay. a great thing to talk about. But looking at the rank, I kind of you know, put them down just the Valiant. And, you know, I mean, what do you think about the, I mean, Eternal Warrior is looking good. I mean, that granted, it's the second issue. And XO, which I think, honestly, after all these issues, and we're a good year and a half into this thing now, with the 18th issue out with XO Man of War, I think that has turned out to be my favorite property out of Valiant right now.
For me, Archer and Armstrong.
It is.
By a wide margin. I think that's a fun book. It's great art. They're doing some cool stuff there. I'm liking it a lot more than I like the original Archer and Armstrong, which I enjoyed. I'm also really enjoying Bloodshot and now The Hardcore as of issue right. 14. Despite the fact it could be kind of gross looking at times because he takes some damage and then heals up. But again, by and large, really nice art style, really good story. I like the Hardcore Bloodshot. They're doing a great job with making him more than just a guy with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So I would put Archer and Armstrong and Bloodshot as my favorites. I can see why XO is one of the best selling of there, although really these are clustering fairly tightly together with 9,806 for Bloodshot at the low end. And 11,985 for Eternal Warrior number 2 at the high end. That's what, 200 unit difference?
Yeah.
That's pretty tight clustering. I mean, the average right there is for this month for them, 10,943. And that middle title there of Archer and Armstrong, 10,811. Pretty much right there. So the median and the average are pretty close. So no real outliers on either side.
Mm-hmm. Are any of these like in? I mean, I don't think Valiant's going to cut any of these anytime soon. But how does a Bloodshot or Shadow Man compare to other titles selling, you know, around 10,000, 10,500 copies?
Compare in what way?
Well, I mean, we always kind of talk about the cutoff of a title getting canceled. That's coming from DC and Marvel, so their expectations are higher. So,
The impression I got at San Diego when I went to the panel that had the retailers and the publishers and they're kind of, you know, all talking or whatever. It was a great panel and nice back and forth between the different levels of the industry. The impression I got from I guess it was Fred over at Valiant was obviously they'd like to be selling more. But they want to earn those sales. They want to build those sales up. They want another percent or two. They think that's very doable, not a hard thing. They just need, you know, hey, put our stuff out there, promote it a little type thing. but not a, hey, we want to double our sales or something outrageously aggressive. I think they want to have right. double the sales, but do it over time in a sustainable manner. I think the turning point for Valiant is going to be as they grow their line, at some point they're going to have a breakaway title. And mm-hmm. I think that would be a good thing for them. Right now, with this kind of clustering, I've got to think a lot of people are pretty much all in or not at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they have structured their books and their storytelling such, you don't have to be all in. Certainly right. it's fun, it's advantageous, I'm not telling anyone to get off any of the books.
I'm all in, and you know that. I mean, yeah. I'm a big proponent of Valiant. And it's funny, I was over the weekend, I was in Chicago, and my wife was kind enough to drive home through the tornadoes that passed through on Sunday. She's driving. She didn't know what she got into. And I'm sitting there on my tablet, just reading my Valiant comics. It was great.
Mm-hmm. I would say if one were to end at the moment, the one I would expect it to be is Shadow Man.
I knew you were going to say that, yeah.
And I say that for a couple of reasons. One, it's the one clicking least with me, not that that matters at all to anybody other than me. I like it, but I'm not loving it.
Mm-hmm.
The recent issue seemed to be a couple of short stories, which seemed a little odd. Mm-hmm. It looks like they're going to have a change in creators. It feels like it's, I don't want to say that it's stumbling, but it's at a crossroads. Whereas I think the others are firing on all cylinders and doing a really good job.
And yeah, Shadow Man to me also seems like it's not part of the universe, even though it is part of the universe kind of thing. You know, clearly there are crossovers that can take place, but nothing has really crossed over into Shadow Man as of yet. I mean, maybe that'll change with Unity. Maybe he'll show up somewhere. And then we know it was just released today that Bloodshot and Archer and Armstrong are going to cross over in May. So yeah. That'll be kind of fun.
Yeah, I saw that. That should be fun. Since those are my two favorite titles, obviously I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, right.
But I think Valiant, they're a new publisher. I think they went in with a game plan and realistic expectations and a budget accordingly, meaning that I don't think they're scrambling. I don't think they're hurting or anything of the sort. I think they're, obviously, any publisher would like to be selling more, but I think they're reasonably satisfied that they're selling based on merit, not based on crazy crossover gimmicks, cover gimmicks, or cheap theatrics and stunts.
Got their cover gimmicks, though.
They do. Every title they've got has multiple covers here.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's something that their publishing strategy is reliant upon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there are other publishers out there that have, 15, 16, 17 covers on a lot of their issues. To me, they're too reliant on cover gimmicks.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and we've talked a little bit about before how, they're not like, putting all of their titles out at once. Every few months, they're bringing out something new. And as we know, at the end of Unity, they're going to bring out Rye, which is Rye, right?
Rye is how I pronounce it. Yeah,
Rye. And then they've been teasing, even going back to when I interviewed Fred and Hunter on my podcast 6 months ago. They've been teasing Ninjak to come out, and hopefully
they'd actually announced that. Actually, but you're right; I haven't seen
nothing yet. They also announced a Ninjak classic hardcover, which I think that is out. The Rye hardcover is not out yet. They're going to do that. They delayed that, I think, to 2014. So, the sooner the better.
I agree with that, but I think they're making some wise moves by slowly growing their line and not just, okay, let's do another 8 titles or something. I think while it's frustrating not to get that Ninjak title just yet and a few things like that, I think that's the right move.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're a publisher to watch.
What else besides these titles, seven titles that we have, Rye and Ninjak, what else could they bring out that off the top of my head I don't know?
Time Walker.
Okay.
Second
Life. They can't bring out Solar. They don't have Solar.
No, not Solar, but Second Life of Dr. Mirage.
Okay.
What other titles did they have? They had a bunch.
And if any of these characters, I don't recall any of these characters being talked about yet in the titles.
Dr. Mirage was just talked about in one of the titles.
He was, okay.
I'm forgetting which one, though.
Harbinger, maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Recent issue of one of them, I forget, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're moving Eternal Warrior to the future in around issue 5 or something with a new story arc, which sets up Rai and those other characters, presumably.
Yes.
So I think they've got a game plan. And again, they've got good creators. They've got good production values. I think they're making a lot of smart moves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look at the back half of previews, the publishers I spend the most time probably looking at, or at least spend the most dollars at, obviously Boom and Dynamite, that's kind of a given. Mm-hmm. But Valiant, like I said, all in over there. Red 5, Big Dog, there's one or two others, Comics Tribe, that just, you know, all of the things aside, you know, I being from one of those publishers, I'd give them the benefit of the doubt if there were such a thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm waiting for Valiant to have one, just a breakout title that does Head and Shoulders above the rest, because I'm curious how they're going to handle that, and if they're going to try to leverage that, cross it over with everything else to bump the others up, or what. Be fun to see how that plays out.
One last thing, and I asked you this question back in September,
mm-hmm.
and the question was, when Sandman Overture number 1 was going to be coming out in October, do you think it would be the number one selling title of October? And it clearly was not. Not compared to Walking Dead number 115.
Well, Walking Dead 115.
Man.
Sam and I are no doubt going to talk about this at length, but we'll talk about it some here. It had a regular cover, it had a blank cover, and it had 10 interlocking covers.
Jeez.
Now, anyone who's a big Walking Dead fan, and I'm pretty sure, actually, Drew did mention this in the last Weekly Comic Spotlight, he got all 10. Now, think
he
about
did.
That. Just for Drew, that's an order of magnitude more comics they sold. It doesn't take many people to make that big of a jump, you know, because this is up by, like, 240,000 units from the previous issue. Now, 116 is going to go right back down. No
right.
two ways about that. And this did not go up as high as the 100th issue, which also had a bazillion covers.
Yeah.
But, you know, Kirkman has dipped into that well twice now. And I get it. I think the reasons he's done it the way he's done it are understandable. I will admit to being disappointed on a more academic level, I guess. I mean, I certainly don't begrudge him the success or the additional sales. But I really liked it when I could point to Walking Dead as something where every sales gain it had could be traced back to the merits of the story, not cheap theatrics. And while they may be cool theatrics, that's what I see these cover gimmicks as. I at least think the interlocking covers was a better gimmick than just the different ones he had before.
Were all the interlocking covers at $2.99?
Yes.
They were, okay.
I believe, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, I'm just wondering if it was a gimmick price that all those covers were $6 or something like that.
No. Okay. When they are at a different price point, they usually show up on the list under a different line item. Diamond only merges the stuff if it's the same issue, the same price, and all is different as the variant cover.
Okay.
But yeah, the Sandman Overture of 93,306 units, the fact that it fell under 100,000 did sort of surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
But
me too, for sure. Yeah.
What disappoints me was that the second issue's already been canceled and will be resolicited. They're having delays.
Right, and you
that.
Mentioned that in your article in CBR. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
This was going to be a bi-monthly series. I think that may have inadvertently hid from them some delays that they just didn't catch in time, and they realized that they're not going to get the next issue out when they expected to. Mm-hmm. Now, to DC's credit, they are canceling and resoliciting. There have been cases where they would, not they, but publishers, we'll say other publishers, would just let the orders stand. Going back to some of the Image ones we'd already talked about earlier, War Heroes, Image United, and Where is Jake Ellis? I don't know that those have been canceled. They're just going to ship whenever they ship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're going to be a month or two late, I kind of get why that happens. The order cycle is not fast enough to account for that. But there does come a point where if you've been, I think the ruling at one point was 90 days after the end of the month in which it should have shipped, then it gets canceled. And Diamond seems to enforce that more with the smaller publishers than with the premier publishers. Now, that may be a difference in the contractual agreement they have with the premier publishers. I don't know. But again, I respect DC for owning up that it was going to be late, telling people it was going to be late, canceling it and resoliciting it. And they may risk losing some sales based on that. Hopefully they won't. But, you know, I'm frustrated it's late just because I think it'll hurt the story momentum for me. Again, I read a lot of stuff. I forget things. I'll admit that.
Right.
But again, they're being much more upfront about it than some other publishers have been.
Well, I started reading Sandman Overture number one over the weekend, and I was like 3 pages into it. And I said to myself, man, I'm going to need till February to get through this book. All those Sandman books are just so dense with not only the wording from Gaiman, but the art. I mean, you could look at every page for an hour, John. You know,
you say that damn. Like it's a bad thing.
No, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying there's so much to absorb.
Yeah.
Than, you know, endless war time from the Avengers. It's just, there's so much in these books.
Well, that's what I'm actually loving about Astro City. To me,
Astro City too. Absolutely.
That's one of the richest comics in terms of depth and things to explore.
Yeah.
In terms of that world. And, you know, with Sandman Overture, you know, they did the 2-page, you know, fold out to a 4-page thing or whatever. And frequently I would think, oh, that's gimmicky or whatever, but it worked really well for me in that issue. So they're doing some artsy type stuff, but well, and this was
it's gorgeous. I mean, yeah, I mean, you can fly through an issue of Nova in 5 minutes, but Sandman, it takes, you know, 5 hours almost.
Well, I forget who it was that had posted on the comic page forum about how they were surprised the reaction to and anticipation for Sandman Overture was so different from the before Watchmen stuff. And to me, the key difference is Sandman Overture, it's Neil Gaiman, it's the same creator. Different artists, but yes. They had rotating artists or whatever. And J.H. Williams, wow, that was a good choice. I mean, no question about that. So, top-notch creative team on the caliber that you would expect, kind of continuing the work, if you will. There's a lot of risk for Gaiman to not live up to what he had done before. So, a little bit of a gutsy move there. Whereas, with Before Watchmen, you've got Alan Moore, who said he'd rather nothing ever be done in that universe ever again, or words to that effect, at least, if not literally those words. I don't know if he's actually said them or not, actually. Right. But it's very much said, nah, he's done with that. Other creators doing stuff, multiple miniseries, I mean, 36, 38 issues when it was all said and done. To me, that was much more of a cash grab by DC, whereas this was bringing back a fan favorite creator on his you know signature work to revisit it and to continue with it. So I expect a very different, you know, reaction to it. I'm going to be very curious to see where Sandman Overture lands at the end of its run, however long it takes to get there, and how this does in trade format, collected format, compared to the other Sandman volumes we've already got out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure they're going to put it out in another omnibus or the Absolute book and make it, what, number 6 or 5 or whatever. I've lost count with the Death book. But yeah, I'm sure they're going to do something like that. So
at the very least, they get another hardcover trade to put on the shelf next to the other stuff.
Oh, they will. Yeah, absolutely. And then they're going to re-release everything like they always do. So,
and it renews interest. It keeps interest alive in that property. And there's a lot to be said for that. Not that I think it was at risk of losing interest, but you know what I mean.
No, I mean, I love Sandman. It's great stuff. And it's been a long time since I've read Sandman. And just, you know, I opened the first few pages and I'm like, oh man, I'm in for a ride.
I'm going to say one of those things that I think people kind of frequently misinterpret when I say this. So I'm going to try to be fairly clear. I like Sandman. I didn't love Sandman.
I totally understand that.
It tends to be more literature, more, I almost want to say sophisticated, more artsy than I read comics or entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really respect what was done with Sandman. There were parts of it I liked a lot more than other parts. I'm glad they've brought it back with the top-notch creative team. But, you know, if they hadn't, I'd have been just okay with that too.
Now, you mentioned Alan Moore. What do you think about his Sandman run, or his Swamp Thing run?
I liked it.
Do you love that, or do you like it?
Like it.
Okay.
As is the case, not that that was technically Vertigo at the time, but it was a precursor too. Those tend to be dealing more in the mystical, supernatural, darker areas than is in my wheelhouse.
Right.
I like superheroes. Mm-hmm. That concept resonates with me for some reason, you know. And you know, there's a lot of great stuff that's been done in other areas that just sometimes the fact that it is well done works against it for me. Mm-hmm. You know, a really well done horror book, I'm probably not going to read.
Mm-hmm. You know, I understand that. Yeah.
Speaking of superheroes, another one I want to mention real quick at 268. That's the Answer trade paperback by a friend of the show, Mike Norton.
Mike, yes.
562. This was a fun series. This was good stuff. Norton is incredibly prolific, and award winning too with Battle Pug.
Mm-hmm.
So good to see him having some success.
And Mike's on Revival.
He's also doing some stuff on Young Avengers.
And oh, that's right.
I think there was something else he was doing in addition to all of that. Clearly not sleeping. I don't know how he finds the time for all of this and keeps the quality up. You know, whenever I see artists being late for whatever reason, and I'm not saying that they're slackers or anything of the sort. They're not. People get late for a variety of reasons. I look at some of these other people like Mike Norton. At one point, I think it was it Leonard Kirk who was doing two titles a month over at DC?
That could be it, yeah.
And, I mean, there are a couple of people that can do great quality and just produce. And then I look at some of these people that just, they can't get the monthly deadline going. They need more time, and that's cool. Sometimes it just takes more time to get the quality work out of some people. That's fine, but schedule it accordingly. You know, and again, Sandman's one of those. If they needed more time, maybe they thought they'd bake that into the schedule by going bi-monthly. Mm-hmm. But for something they knew was going to be pretty high-profile stuff, I really think they should have stockpiled it, released it monthly, although that would have precluded the special every other month issue they're doing. But, you know, hey, we'll see how it impacts sales, if at all, down the line.
Yeah, just above Mike's The Answer is rank 259. Revival Volume 1, 9 times on the reorder list there for a total of over 10,000 copies, John. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good for Mike. That's great.
That's great stuff. What was the other one he did with Sealy?
Sealy does Hackslash. I forget.
Not Hackslash. It was The Waiting Place.
Yes, The Waiting Place, yeah.
What has that gotten up to in sales? I don't remember. I'm trying to think if that's on here.
Well, you know, they share a studio together.
Did not realize that. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. In Chicago, yep.
Yeah. If listeners are ever at a show and they see Mike Norton, go talk to him. He's a great guy to talk with.
Oh, he's great.
A lot of fun.
I will mention one more thing, John, because I got a free copy, or review copy, I should mention, from Titan. And here it's listed as Random House, but at rank 278 is the First Kingdom hardcover graphic novel. It's only for $25, $24.99. It did 544 units, which seems low, which is low. However, this is Jack Katz's epic First Kingdom run from the early 1970s and mid-1970s, and I'm reading it now, and oh my god, this is just fantastic, fantastic art and epic storytelling too. It's just this you know, post-apocalyptic Earth, and it, you know, everything is just rendered, every bit of the page is done. And it took Jack Katz years and years to finish this, and it will be 6 volumes when it's all complete. It's never been reprinted.
Really?
It's been attempted to be reprinted, but it's never been reprinted in full. And here we have Titan and Random House going in there and giving it their all to get this out finally. And if anybody is interested in this, it's one of these things that, you know, is talked about in comic lore, and you read it about in the Comics Journal every once in a while. This comes up, and I've heard about this years ago, and I've always wanted to read it, but you can't find it because nobody's ever reprinted it. And finally, Titan has got the go ahead to to reprint this stuff, and it truly is an epic run of like I said, post-apocalyptic space, and it feels like Conan the Barbarian, and it's very adult in nature. There's sex and there's a lot of boobs, and there's not much swearing, but there's violence, of course. So it's not for kids, definitely not. But anybody who's ever interested in the art form should definitely pick this up. Jack Katz is one of the greats, and he's still alive. And I think he's 89 years old or something like that. But he's going to be one of the last to go. So definitely, if anybody's interested, look it up on Wikipedia or look it up for Titan, The First Kingdom by Jack Katz.
Now, the reason I have it down as Random House is the vendor code they listed was RAN. If they'd put something for Titan there, I'd have put Titan over there.
But that's I don't know. I mean, Titan's European, so how does that work? I think
Random may have just been distributing it here in the States. I'm not sure.
That could be it, yeah.
Because I've seen a couple of things pop up under Random that it's like, really? Yeah, that seems a little odd.
But, and nothing under Titan, right?
Yeah. Now, is that Titan Comics or Titan Publishing?
I think they're one and the same, I think.
Because I'm reading Number Cruncher and a few other things from, I thought, Titan Comics, and I wasn't sure if they were the same or not. They may be.
I do not know.
Fair enough. Like I said, I wasn't sure either.
You know, I know the emblem has got, it looks like Titan, with Saturn's rings,
Then it's the same. Titan Comics has that. Titan
Comics. Yeah,
it's like a moon for the planet with another moon in the ring kind of deal.
It's the Saturn with shape. The moon of Titan. Yes, that's it.
Yeah, same logo. I'm looking at Kronos Commanders in my latest shipment. Fun time travel story there. So yeah, a lot of good stuff. List bottomed out this time. 503 units. Most popular price point was $14.99. 57 items there. Some, 41 at $19.99. 30 at $24.99. A lot of different price points and stuff. Big ticket items this time around were at the $100 or so range. What were those? Those were... Actually, we got a couple.
It was $200.
Fantastic Four by Hickman Omnibus Volume 1 was at $100. A penny less than that was the Fantastic Four Omnibus Volume 1. That's just damned confusing.
Yeah.
Because they're, I think, the same thing. I'd have to go pull up the May order form because one's got an order code of 0710. The other one is 0711. But they've got different titles in the description, and they're off by a penny.
Hmm.
And they both came out the same day. I'm sure they covered the same basic thing. Mm-hmm. Absolute Joker, Luthor, DC Comics 1 Million Omnibus, and then at $95, the Joe Kubert Tour Artist Edition from IDW.
What was $200?
There was one at $100. Was there a $200 item? There was not.
Oh, maybe not. Oh, I just see it on a list here. Okay, that's what I'm looking at.
Okay. Sometimes I filter that chart of the price points down to just the ones that have stuff, but I was lazy this time.
Yeah, you're all good.
So, working on redoing some of the spreadsheet stuff. I've made progress on the comic side. I have not on the trade side, but we'll get to that when I get to that. What do you got coming up on your show these days?
Well, I'm finally going to record this week. I haven't recorded in a few weeks, and I'm just going to go over... some stuff. I'll probably touch on the Valiant hardcovers and how they're doing and what I like about them. A little bit about Sandman. I don't know if you saw, but DC is going to release basically they're putting together their four or five absolutes into two volumes. So all 80 issues and extra stuff into it. They call it their Silver deluxe edition, and it's a huge massive book with lots of extra stuff, so it's like absolute 2.0 kind of thing. So
cool.
I'll talk about that. It's the next, we're getting into these uber bigger and bigger and bigger with the Adamantium collections from with Wolverine and the new X-Men one. They just keep on getting bigger and bigger, so where is it going to end? I'm kind of
the forklift edition.
Yeah, basically, it's just getting way out of hand. So, what about you?
Let's see. We're recording this on a Monday night. I'm hoping to get it up this Wednesday, which would be before Friday, which is when the Austin Comic Book Convention is.
That's right. You're going to that. That'll be fun.
Going to that, actually doing a panel this time around. Doing it with Derek from Comics Alternative, Russell, and another one of Derek's friends though, before of us, just social media and comics and such.
So, oh, that'll be fun.
Should be a lot of fun. I can talk about the comic stuff and not so much on the Twitter, the Facebook, or any of that stuff. I'm not that social, I guess. Spend enough time on the podcast. No, it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. It's a Wizard World convention here. It's grown a lot over the last couple of years. It's a good convention. They've really turned it into something, frankly, a lot bigger, a lot faster than I would have expected.
So it's one of the better Wizard Worlds? Is that what you're saying?
It's my favorite one, meaning it's the only one I've ever been to, really. I guess I went to a Philly or Pittsburgh con about 15-plus years ago. No, scratch that, 20 years ago. I don't remember if that was a Wizard winner. Hell, I don't even remember if Wizard was around back then. This would have been 93. Know. Anyways, I can't really compare it to the other Wizard conventions. I haven't been to others. Yeah. But they're running a good convention here in town. And again, they've built it up a lot bigger than I would have expected this town to have been able to support. They're doing a great job with it. So I'm looking forward to it. Anyone listening to this before that convention wants to say hi to me or whatever, again, 7 o'clock panel in, I think, room 12. Check the program, social media and comics and such, the how, the why, and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so I got that. Obviously still doing the weekly comic spotlight with Drew, having a lot of fun with that, having some great discussions. Speaking of Valiant, we're actually going to talk about Unity on the next episode of that.
Good deal.
Looking forward to reading that. Still doing the preview spotlight and stuff. I don't know if you listened to the latest one, but we had a new listener send in a lot of stuff on trades and hardcovers. So we got some good coverage on that this last time around. I was real pleased with that.
Excellent.
Beyond that, yeah, same old, same old. Just reading a lot of comics, podcasting about them, and that eats up a lot of my time. It's fun, though.
Awesome. Good show.
That do it?
That'll do it, man.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the comic book page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside of Diamond Comics distribution channels included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.